Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, sitting in the Lawrence Power Chair today. I'm feeling the power.
Two times in 1 month. Look at you.
Oh, it's also starting to fit pretty well.
Yeah. You're live and in person.
Yes, I am. Bob, good to see you.
Steve, always a pleasure to see you.
Let's start out with Sean. Sean, the last couple of days, has been one of the public address announcers at the Little League World Series, I believe, at Volunteer Stadium.
That is correct, yes.
What was the experience like? Because all the reviews I'm getting, you were awesome.
Oh, well, thanks for that. I appreciate it. It was tons of fun, and I can't thank enough, you know, Brian McClintock and all the PA announcers, and as well as Chris Downs in the communications department, just all five-star, you know, top-shelf people, and they answered all my questions when I was hung up on it. Of course, we can't leave out Gabe Sinacropi as well. So the original plan was to shadow a game last Thursday with Gabe. That was the deal with a round of rain last Thursday, so it was kind of a washout. But we were able to shadow three or four games before the two games that I was assigned to do on Sunday, the 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. game. So those were winner's bracket games between South Korea and Curacao, and then Mexico and Japan. So the game where the more challenging pronunciations, that was my first game, so I got tossed right into it right out of the gate. It's kind of deceiving, though, because you think the Japan pronunciations aren't all that bad, but still.
Excuse me. Hold on there. Au contraire, mon frère. Okay. Back in the 80s, I did a matchup in men's volleyball between Penn State and the Japanese touring all-star team. When you have to say them fast and don't have to wait eight pitches to do it.
Well, that's a good thing. I didn't have to go fast. At least with the introductions, I had about a 8 to 10 second gap in between names where I was able to breathe and check the pronunciation again, then roll. So
yeah,
now batting Ichiro Suzuki.
Yes.
Wait a minute. He can't be a little leaguer. I'm telling you, I think there's an age problem here.
Well, the good thing about Japanese pronunciations is when you look at the English version, it's spelled out phonetically because that's how they translate it. Right. So you just got to remember your third grade phonics teacher and go back, you know, to those days.
So who was your third grade phonics teacher?
Let's see. That would be Mrs. Robinson. Cuckoo, cuckoo.
Wow,
no, that's true. Mrs. Robinson.
Mrs. Robinson. Yeah. Well, Mrs. Robinson.
She went on to greater fame.
Mrs. Yes. Robinson, you taught Sean Carey linguistically well.
It's the secret.
That was a lot of fun. Had so much fun. Hopefully they'll invite me back. But it's just great now to be part of their club. And Buhner, if you'd have had a smartphone, Bob, but you still have that. You don't have a flip phone. You just have
two tin cans and a long string, Sean.
I would have been more than happy to send you a photo when Clint Hurdle did the ceremonial first pitch before the 1 o'clock game on Sunday.
Did he make the first pitch across the plate and in the strike zone?
Yes, he did.
Well, that's better than most of his pitchers.
Wow.
Better than what Chris Archer did last night.
And so. I am a huge Pirates fan, as everyone knows.
It's been tough for you.
Now, remember, years and years ago, decades ago, with the Kansas City Royals, Clint Hurdle was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as the next phenom. And it turned out that, you know, this is what it shows you how tough it is to make it in the game. Injuries, a couple other things derailed him, and yet he found his way into management. He is now the third longest serving manager active in the majors, Bruce Bochy being one, and Ned Yost with the Kansas City Royals, and then Clint.
Well, Clint, you know, before Pittsburgh was out of Colorado, I think he has a World Series ring to his...
He does. He was with the Colorado Rockies. They won the National League. The Red Sox swept them in four games.
Okay, there you go. He's in the World Series. But, you know, he is, aside from his managerial abilities, he is an incredibly good person.
That's what everybody says. A very giving, especially the community. He gets it. He understands it. But needless to say, Sean, we are... thrilled for you. Now, the part where you said, and now throwing out the first punch, Clint Hurdell. I probably wouldn't have done that.
You replay the tape?
Over and over again.
And hoping for it to come out differently, right, each time.
But no, absolute applause to you. I'm so happy for you because I know this meant a lot to Sean.
Absolutely.
And now we're going to do a lot of on-air shaming for the next 11 months.
Yeah. Yes.
To force them to bring him back.
Well, you know,
really, you just want to keep going corporate or help the local guy who's really good?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, Keener.
Yeah. You know, Steve, one of the things, and Sean, I think we're spoiled in this area because the Little League World Series around the world is incredibly favorably reviewed, and people follow it literally around the planet. And we sometimes just take it for granted, these incredible events that go on up in South Williamsport.
You know what? I'm going to disagree with you.
You are allowed, absolutely.
I'm going to respectfully disagree. I think... I realize you can go away from some place like, oh, wow, how awesome. But I think everybody around here appreciates the Little League World Series. I know people in State College, for example, that every year they make a trip up there because it's a big deal. And I've lamented the fact that even though I've been there when the Little League World Series is being played, for example, a few years ago, I was the guest speaker at the umpires' luncheon.
Oh, that must have been something.
Right? Well, no.
I'm only kidding.
They're all volunteers.
Right? No, that's so big. We forget that.
Right? And I spoke at that, but I had to get back to go to work because, again, we're at the time of the year where between football practice, Spikes baseball, and so forth, because I just did 13 Spikes games in 12 days.
Yeah.
So I have never gone to a Little League World Series game. I've been to Lomity Stadium. I've been to Volunteer Stadium. I mean, I've been there. I've been on the grounds.
Well,
but I've actually never seen a game there.
The last time I was there, a team from Keystone Central Lock Haven.
His team. I mean, look
at Sean Carey's team.
Look at him. He's like,
smiling.
He's over there. It's like,
you know, and they lost, Sean, correct me on this, they lost 1-0 to a team from California on a first inning home run, that was it.
That was the first round game, but it wasn't the team from California.
Okay.
Actually, the team from California was the team from California eliminated Keystone.
Okay.
They actually that year went on to win the whole thing.
They did. Who was the first team that beat them then? It was just 1-0.
It was
a home run, and that was it.
And it was the starting pitcher that hit the home run right down the left field line. It was barely fair. It was either from Kentucky or Tennessee, one of the two teams.
And
Kentucky.
Yeah.
Kentucky.
And there were 45,000 folks in that stadium that night, including Sean and me.
But see, but that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Is it appreciated locally? So a local team made it in, and 45,000 people showed up. So
absolutely.
It was not taken...
That year was great.
...for granted. If State College had been allowed to get there a few years ago in the Danny Almonte year...
Yeah.
Okay, because they were the ones that they beat to get there
in the right? Northeast Regionals.
Okay, the same thing would have happened.
Oh yeah,
you'd have had an influx of fans that would have overflowed and overran the place like the Keystone group did, as a matter of fact. But I'm just, he is a pro's pro.
Yeah,
he sounds terrific. I'll bet you impressed the daylights out of them. And again, I know you gave props to a lot of people because I know, look, when you do something for the first time, you need some guidance along the way.
Well, once I got the starting lineups for that South Korea Curacao game out of the way. Just took a deep breath, exhaled, then the rest was great.
And how about the music? You know, it's, you, they give you an iPad. You know your music, but they also have X selections that must be played. So how did that work?
There is a playlist for all. There's a different playlist for all 29 games. Separate playlist. So you can you don't have to play the songs in specific order, but as long as you stick with that playlist for that certain game, you're good to go. Now there may be times where at this half inning. Dugout's going to do there's going to be a special dugout dance cam on the video screen. Mm-hmm. So you just try your best to find a very big up-tempo song, maybe a song that has dance in the title, because you want people in the crowd
sure.
to dance and you want that reaction on the video board.
Right.
So what we do is, you know, first batter of that inning, we always look ahead to what's coming up that next half inning. Like if I had a sponsor read to do, or if there was something pre-recorded on the video board that was going to air, or maybe I was just going to play a song that was going to run for that entire okay. minute and a half, 2 minute break. So yeah, all structured, because I had a headset with the PA microphone
sure.
built into it, which was great. So it was great getting cues from everybody. Everything stayed on schedule and on format, and made it as smooth as possible.
Now this is where a question, not me, and I speak for Bob. This question that we think is really important. Did you get preferred parking?
Absolutely.
We could borrow it.
Well, you can borrow it. You sure can.
Did you get preferred parking?
I was in we were mixed in with like staff and media in the same lot together. So, although we had to park in one of the practice fields though on Sunday, because where the media and staff would park during the rest of the tournament, that was blocked out for Major League Baseball for when the buses showed up for Sunday.
You got, in other words, you got bumped by the Cubs and the Pirates.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, one major league team showed up.
Yeah, exactly, and a very good double A team with them. and Sean, when you're doing this, how much do you coordinate what you're doing with what's going on in television?
I pretty much just coordinate with. The video people that were sitting to my left that run the board, and then it's pretty much just timed out the exact time length that ESPN would use for their breaks.
Does the booth have a fan in it?
Get this. Had an HVAC.
What?
Had an HVAC.
Wow.
Beaver Stadium, take note.
They put an HVAC in last year, and it was right up above my right shoulder. And let me tell you, it was sticky and stifling on Sunday. It felt pretty good.
We have a rotary fan in the broadcast booth of champions.
And that's not right. It's not right.
It's not that bad.
But still, it should be much better air circulation for you and the Hammer and Raj and Jeff. Whatever. I mean,
I thought Roger was just there with fanning you guys during the game.
That was during the 2000s. get with the times.
Yes, Mr. Corley.
We have a rotary fan now. Every decade, something new.
But I guess for the two of you, this is my take on both of you in your performances at Beaver Stadium or at Little League stadiums. It takes a heck of a lot of effort to make something look effortless.
Sean makes everything look effortless.
But it takes a lot of effort.
And then there are other people where they feel like they're putting out a fire every 2 seconds. All right, we'll come back. What?
No. I understand.
I mean, they can't even stop to say hi to you in the parking lot.
That's true.
That was this morning. He's like, I'm late. I got to get somewhere. And I was like, good morning to you, too.
Well, I know where I'd like to send you.
By the way, 2011, opening game, Keystone versus LaGrange, Kentucky. That was a 1-0 loss.
Steve
Griffin McLarty was the one who hit the home run.
Steve got it. He nailed it. He said Kentucky.
Do you think I don't pay attention?
Well, it was a 50-50 toss-up, and he got I saw him flip the coin over here, and heads was Kentucky.
Just letting those out there that were doubting it.
And it's a special coin. Yes. On one side was the chief, and on the other side was the suit. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Little League World Series, which Sean has been a part of. And by the way, there are a lot of people that are a part of making that finely tuned machine. Sean said something to us interesting during the break. He said, you really don't know ESPN is there. And the reason I think you don't really, if you're working, you don't really know they're there. Because this is such a finely tuned machine at Williamsport that everything's timed out and it times out perfectly with them.
Exactly right. Like, especially in the segments, like if you see a fun game that the kids will play from the video screen, you know, it's like, right, guess the ball that's inside the cap. Or they may show like a trivia question that ties in with the Little League Museum. And you time that out with a song, and you just wait for the player to come up to the plate, and okay, oh wow, lo and behold, there's the network right back with the game. But yeah, it all goes and flows together, and yeah, I mean, if you didn't see the logo there, you wouldn't have thought they'd be there.
And I've said this on the show for years now, but it bears saying again, I think that the Little League World Series, to me, is the best broadcast ESPN does every year, because they concentrate on the kids, they concentrate on the games. And that's what they do. They don't sit there and start speculating, okay, it's a college football Saturday. Which four teams do you think are going to be in the college football playoff? Okay, over here in the back, I don't really care. Okay, no. Tell me about the game. I'm watching this game. I've got a whole bunch of games to pick. I picked this game to watch. Tell me about the game I'm watching. Okay, if I wanted to watch the Auburn-Alabama game in 3 weeks, I will once we get to it.
So this has nothing to do with live play-by-play coverage on ESPN, but I got up this morning and watched SportsCenter. I hadn't watched SportsCenter in a while. Well, they had Mel Kiper on this morning, and he's talking about, okay, who's going to go in the draft next spring? But it's like, my goodness, the season hasn't even started yet.
See, and when
ridiculous.
When they do the Little League World Series, they just do the game and talk about the kids.
And, you know, the thing I like about the Little League World Series is they always have a really outstanding retired pro baseball player
this
in the booth.
David Ross. David Ross. Jessica Mendoza was up there the other day. She did a great job.
Yeah.
And Carl Ravitch does a great job. But they talk about the kids, the game, you know, maybe the atmosphere surrounding it. And everything's positive.
Yes.
You never hear a negative word at all. And because ESPN has a beautiful understanding of 11 and 12-year-olds playing baseball. It's the best broadcast they do all year, to me. The best broadcast they do all year. They're positive. They're supportive. They talk about the game in front of them. And they don't sit there speculating the entire time when they do everything else. Oh, what do you think about the possibility of the DH? Look, that's why you get a studio show.
Yeah,
okay? Go there. Okay, I'm watching the Red Sox play the Indians. Tell me about the Red Sox and the Indians. Okay, I'm watching Monday Night Football. I really don't need to know what you think of yesterday's call in the Green Bay game.
Okay? Exactly.
I'm watching that game. When they do the Little League World Series, all they do are the games.
What I always loved to watch growing up as a kid, when Jim Palmer was the color analyst for so many years, they would always go to those pre-recorded segments and show those little tips as to how kids can become better players.
Yeah.
And now Kyle Peterson has taken that up. And
Kyle Peterson we've had Kyle Peterson on the show. He's terrific.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's, to me, the week and a half they do this, actually 2 weeks, it goes into the regionals. That, to me, it's the best stuff they do. I mean, to me, that's the way, old school me, to me, that's what TV should do.
And
I admire how they do the Little League World Series very much. Just my opinion. it's, you know, I don't know. The other things that they do, it's like, okay. I mean, I know you got 24 hours, 7 days a week. All right. Let's see. Got plenty going on today.
Big party tonight, yeah.
Oh, huge party tonight.
Come on,
you know.
Yeah.
I think somebody thinks it's a surprise party for them.
No, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it, in a lot of ways, it actually is.
Oh, okay.
Because the big surprise is it's not for him.
Yes.
All right, so
I saw him when he was leaving singing 100 barrels or 100 bottles of beer in the shelf.
Well, that was yesterday when they took the liquor to the party.
Oh, and most of it made it.
Yes.
Why did some of that end up in Danville?
Yes.
Not at Bob's house.
Not at my house.
No.
Over at Ward 3?
Yes.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. BenJonesSteakHouse.com at 4:06 today. All right, so we're all set on that. Bob Buhner's here. Last night, James Franklin met with the media after practice.
Yeah.
And now, I'll be honest about it. I honestly and strongly felt he was not going to name a starting quarterback last night. I really let everybody play along with this idea.
Sure.
Right, because I honestly didn't think he was going to name one. Now, you're not playing this weekend. And at some point, you know that you're going to have a one, and I think everybody's assuming who the one is. I think he has given everybody the opportunity to show what they can do. And now, you know, they have all the data they need. And they may need a little more to really make a decision on a one. James Franklin has always been a one quarterback guy. So he's not been the kind of guy that goes out there, plays a quarterback, brings a guy in for a couple of series, see what he can do. No, he's always been a one quarterback guy. Even Bill O'Brien, one game. It was the Syracuse game in 2013.
The season opener.
Season opener. Remember they had a transfer by the name of Tyler Ferguson?
Oh, absolutely.
And against Syracuse, he came in for one or two series.
Yeah, and we have a little freshman by the name of Hackenberg. Who...
Yeah. Hackenberg started.
Yes.
Hackenberg started, but they brought Ferguson in for a couple series, and then he never did it again after that.
Yeah.
Which is, again, that's 180 of what an NFL coach does. And Bill had been an NFL coach for years with the Patriots. Now, it's a little easier to make your decision when, okay, I don't think we're going to use Brian Hoyer for a series or two. I think we'll stick with Brady.
Yeah, good old Brady. He'll be there.
So it makes it easier. But I think that the two-quarterback solution, and James had coached with Green Bay, he knows what it's like to be around a situation like that. He's always been a one quarterback guy. So whomever he selects, that's his quarterback.
But, you know, the criticism I have of that is late in the game when you're up by four touchdowns. Why is number one still in the game playing? You know, because the coach wants to stick with him. I've always worried about an injury in those kind of situations.
Good question. I think that... depends on when the fourth quarter.
Sure.
All right, so let's just say 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, you're up by four touchdowns. I think coaches, especially in today's explosive offensive world, get concerned about, quote, pulling the plug too soon. Let's take a basketball example. Why don't they put the reserves in? There's 5 minutes to go, you're up by 15 points. Right, or there's 3 minutes to go. 3 minutes to go, you're up by 15 points. That's five possessions.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's 5 3-pointers. And so coaches, even though they probably feel like they're in good shape, probably are not comfortable enough to feel like they're in good shape. Now, you, the fan, you can feel like you're in good shape all you want. Your job's not on the line.
No, exactly.
So I
just fear the injury factor when it looks like the game is safe.
But if they're just handing off, I don't care who's in there.
That's what I mean. Well, yeah, and they're not throwing the ball deep or putting the quarterback in a situation where it's a run-pass option and he's got a really well smacked around.
So I think part of that is circumstance. Part of that is there's still that insecurity. You're not ahead enough.
Well, that's coaches never think they're ahead enough.
The fan may think you're ahead enough. You probably are ahead enough. I mean, the fan's not wrong.
No.
But it's, you know, you're sitting there saying, maybe I'll just go one more series just to make sure. And I think that probably enters into it. And in basketball, you're up by all these points. You got 3 minutes to go. No.
Well, you know, Steve, the greatest example of that in a basketball analogy occurred about two seasons ago, just up the river in Lewisburg with Bucknell and Colgate.
Yep.
Colgate up 9 points with 30 seconds to go.
Oh, I've done this game.
Yeah, they lost.
Oh, Penn State's playing number one Temple?
Yes.
In 1988? Vreeswijk and Macon. Penn State's up 9 with 90 seconds to go. Vreeswijk made 2 threes and Macon made a three.
I remember Macon, and that was a John Chaney coach Temple team.
And it went to overtime and Penn State lost. See, that's why coaches get a little antsy about, like, I know you think I have enough points. When you're constantly conditioning yourself to, okay, what's the worst case scenario? Okay. Remember, coaches are always thinking about the worst case scenario because they've got to deal with the worst. You know, how can I prevent the worst case scenario? You keep thinking that way, and okay, look, I trust him. What happened? You know, because, and then you do get into the other part. All right, I put the backup in. I'd like to call a pass or two. Just a right, and you're like, do I do that?
What was the game Joe Paterno sent a quarterback in and
Rutgers,
and there was a late pass thrown for a touchdown?
Well,
and
guess what?
Yeah,
that wasn't the play.
I know it was ad lib.
The play was supposed to be a crossing pattern, a 5-yard cross to Cuncho Brown, the tight end. That was the play.
Yeah, didn't happen.
No, went back through the Chris Campbell touchdown.
And the Rutgers coach was a bit, shall we say, disappointed.
Yeah.
And he let the world know. But it's football. So, well, the other, you know, when...
I have a strong suggestion. I mean, why don't you defend it?
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, but, you know, at some point, you are partially culpable.
Oh, absolutely. Get a better, you know, have a better team. The other thing I think with the one quarterback thing... I think Coach Franklin has a variation on that. And I look at Tommy Stevens, number two. Well, he played a lot of games, a lot of plays, scored a lot of touchdowns, and he was really in the game many times.
Yeah.
And so there was a 1.5 quarterback solution, I guess I would say.
Yeah, well, I think you're in a situation right now where what you want to do is you want to make sure the two of them have a real handle on playing quarterback.
Yeah, before you
even start to even remotely consider, and you may reject it. You may say, no, we're not going to do that.
Right.
But the number one thing that you need to do is do both guys know how to play quarterback. Right now, Penn State has enough other guys. This is what I've looked at in the preseason. And I want to say this where I'm not confusing the audience. Because I said this the other day on a show, and for whatever reason, somebody said they were confused by what I said until I clarified it. I think I've got a pretty good handle on the first 53 or 55 guys. And you're like, what the heck are you talking about? It's 11 on 11. Not the way today's game is played. The way today's game is played, that you're playing your ones, you play a lot of your twos, you're constantly changing and rotating people. So let's just take defensive end. Well, Penn State's not going to play 4 defensive ends. Penn State's going to play at minimum 5 defensive ends. They're going to play Shaka Toney. They're going to play Yitor Gross-Matos. They're going to play Shane Simmons. They're going to play Jason Oway. And they're going to play Daniel Joseph. So that's 5. So now we're up to 45 guys.
Sure.
Okay. The linebackers. Well, they could play as many as 7 linebackers. Right? That includes maybe somebody showing up on special teams.
Sure. Right?
So now we're at 46 guys. Okay. Safeties. I think they're going to play 4 safeties. I think that's going to be that's the way it's. And safety was a spot where I openly asked, all right, the 3 areas I looked at were 4th safety, 6th receiver, okay, 2 more offensive linemen. To be honest with you, Bob, I feel like in the preseason, without seeing them play games, I'm very comfortable now with what I've seen. Seeing Brisker now play with Sutherland, with Wade, with Garrett Taylor, I feel that Penn State has 4 very good, competent safeties that can play the game. So,
and Lamont Wade, I think, from all that I've read, really has made tremendous strides in the last season.
I give him all the credit in the world because, you know, there are times he struggled. There were times I thought he was good, but there are also times I thought he struggled.
Well, and
he's not struggling, which really helps. And then you look at corner. They've got a lot of options at corner. Tariq, obviously, and John. John Reed, Tariq Castro-Fields is a very good cover guy. Length, quickness, understands leverage. And Tariq Castro-Fields last year also did not allow a single touchdown pass all season. He's just really good. But John Reed is so meticulous in his preparation. John Reed knows the tendencies of every receiver out there because he studies and studies and studies and studies to the point where he even knows the tendencies of Penn State's receivers because he studies them for practice. And I was talking to a scout. I'm not going to name the team.
Understandable.
Okay? I'm not going to name the team. Talking to an NFL scout yesterday about him, he goes, that's our kind of guy.
Sure.
Right? He says, that guy knows how to play. That, you know. It was just about him. It wasn't comparing him to anybody else. He says, I see a guy like that. He says, oh, boy, I can't wait to go back and talk to our people about a guy like that.
It sounds like that the Penn State defense, at least as we sit about 9 days or 10 days away from the opening kickoff, is looking to be the top squad of the on the team in terms of where they are right now.
This defense is, I think, has a chance to be very, very good because, Bob, everybody can run. I mean, like, everybody can run. And you notice that a lot of people have gone in talking about how they're going to be a defensive tackle. They've got enough defensive tackles.
Oh, but
you look at Shelton. You look at Robert Windsor, Mustafa, Damian Barber. You know, Fred Hansard, I think people forget Fred Hansard's still there. Fred Hansard's last week or so, I think Fred Hansard's done a lot better. Judge Culpepper's a guy that his clock is maybe not as quick as other playing time clocks, and sometimes it takes a little bit more. Now I think his clock is starting to get on track in terms of the ability to play. Now you go to the offensive side. You have to see all this stuff in games. So please,
yeah,
everybody out there, understand. You have to see all of this in games.
In real-time games, too.
I only can tell you what I've observed to this point. But let's take Dan Chiesa. Dan Chiesa at wide receiver, who caught the touchdown pass in the blue-white game, and then James gave a scholarship to right after catching the touchdown. Okay?
Catch a touchdown, get your tuition paid.
Well done.
Exactly.
Chiesa was really, really good in the spring. Now, do you know how many guys over the course of my lifetime that I've seen that were really, really good in the spring, and then when training camp came around, it didn't sustain itself?
Well, you know, one of those examples I remember was a fellow that in the blue-white game a few years ago was a running back named Ciccarella. And he
Cole Ciccarelli.
Yeah, Ciccarelli.
Yeah.
He led the blue-white game in rushing and carries and everything else, and he's now at Shippensburg.
Yeah. Well, and again, he was one of the run-on, walk-on guys.
Yeah.
There's so many guys that I look at, Bob, that are walk-ons at Penn State, and I can give you a long list on the current team right now that would be absolute stars at an FCS team. They'd be stars on an FCS.
Well, there's one guy from Sean Carey's hometown of Lock Haven who started out as a walk-on, I remember, number 25, ended up with a scholarship and a captaincy of the special teams, Vaughn Walker.
And he would have been a star at an FCS team.
Absolutely.
A star. Yet they wanted to stay there, and it turned out that they were critical pieces in Penn State winning. Penn State has a lot of guys like that. So now back to Chisenhem. All right, how's he going to be compared to what I saw in the spring? Right? Is he going to be like, okay, I captured lightning in a bottle for a month? Or did it sustain itself? And here's the exciting part. It sustained himself. I mean, I think James would tell you he's had a heck of a camp.
Who is the one fella besides Shisana that's just a flyer on the receiving corps?
KJ Hamler.
Well, but it's beyond him. It's somebody else who is was on the 4x100, won gold medal in states in high school as a sprinter. I'm just trying.
About Journey Brown?
No, it's not him. It's a wide receiver I'm thinking of.
Well, it may have been Chisenhem.
I think it is Chisenhem.
Chisenhem was a track guy.
Yeah.
Chisenhem actually came to Penn State on a track scholarship.
That's the guy I'm talking about. Yeah.
And then he went to his parents and said, I want to play football. All right. Which meant no scholarship.
Exactly.
And they looked at him like, okay, are you all right?
Yeah.
And the first time through didn't go well, Bob. It just didn't go well.
Well,
so
sure.
So he went back to track, did his deal, but then he decided to come back. He's a senior. He's a fifth-year guy now. And guess what? For whatever reason, the tumblers have all fallen into place. Now, do we need to see him now do this in a game? Oh, of course we
absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
That's always the bottom line evaluator. So you're just, at this point, do I think he has the capability of doing it in a game? Yes. Do I now need to see it proven to me? Look, when it comes to this stuff, you have to act like you're from Missouri.
Sure.
Show me.
All yeah. Right?
So you're, okay, the only way to win time in to get a chance at the game is to win practice. Okay? Well, guess what? He's won practice. Now he's won the opportunity to see if he can do it in a game. All right? And that's what practice is. Have you won the opportunity to show you can do it in a game? And to me, I think I've got, in my mind, 54, 55 guys just off the top of my head. I might be missing a couple. But I think have all won their opportunity to be in the game, whether it's on a sub package,
right?
Whether it's in a relief role, whether it's in a way to give the starter a break for 10 plays, whatever.
Special teams, that stuff.
Special teams. I've already got in my mind probably 55 guys I can think of that I think have won their way through practice to the opportunity to play in a game for Penn State.
Now, Steve, we have Penn State and everybody else in the NCAA D1 has 85 scholarships.
Yep.
How many players are actually on the Penn State team now as we speak?
Well, you're only allowed at camp to have 105.
So you've got 20 more than your scholarship limit.
Right. You then, on the first day of classes, can expand.
Okay.
And the first day of classes for Penn State will be Monday. In the end, you'll end up with 125.
Okay, wow.
I mean, and look, to run a practice right and competently and to run it at the pace to get done what you need to get done, you actually do need 125.
You know, the funny part is my wife asked me a question the other day, and she was really baffled by this. We were talking about some of the Penn State players, and she said, why does Penn State have two players that both wear number 11?
Oh.
Well, Alice, they only do double digits, and they have a potential 120-some guys on the team.
Right.
And so somebody gets to wear the same jersey as somebody else.
Micah Parsons, Daniel George.
Exactly right.
And so part of the entertainment factor on the road is having a guy make a tackle that's playing on offense. All right. Tackle made by Daniel George. That might be Parsons.
Could possibly be Parsons.
Okay. See that LB next to his name? That means he plays defense. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. The Sean Carey Clam Bake continues on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today. I've been talking a lot of Penn State football. Ben Jones, statecollege.com in the next half hour. Bob Buhner's here, Sean Carey's here, and right now, in a much, much bigger office. Did you see the size of the office they gave that guy?
How about that?
You mean Sean's got a bigger office?
No.
Oh, actually, the one I've been in, I've been in mine for a little over a year.
Oh, yeah. No, he's...
Oh, he's got the palace right there, Sean Carey.
Nah.
I mean the office, the digital media guy got moved to. My goodness. It has furniture in it. I mean, it looks like a living room.
Yeah. Steve, coaches show at Penn State. When's your first time?
A week from tomorrow.
And where at?
It will be at Permane Brothers in downtown State College.
Where the coleslaw and fries are on the sandwich.
I like fries with that, yes.
I mean, they put coleslaw and fries on ice cream sundaes there. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. It's just a Pittsburgh thing. What's the deal with you people, the coleslaw and fries?
Oh, it's the only way to do it.
Yinzers.
Yep, the Yinzers.
The Yinzer lifestyle.
But yeah, the 29th is the first talk show. And James Franklin will be there, and then we'll get Idaho. I should have Idaho. I got 90% of Idaho done. I have all of Penn State done, but I got 90% of Idaho done.
Is their mascot a potato?
No, it's a vandal.
Oh, the,
it's a vandal.
I didn't know the vandals reached into Idaho. I thought they were mostly in Europe.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.